Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Twins lose. They drop 2-3 to the Angels over the weekend. They open up a home series against the Kansas City Royals tonight, 6 o'clock pregame. Hopefully the Twins can get back on track. They're now 2.5 games back of the Guardians, so they need to pile up some wins. It is Monday. We love to bring in Pete and Jerry to talk about things happening in the financial world as well as the world of sports, two things that Pete knows much about. But first, as we bring in Pete on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, we had this debate, Pete, about fall as opposed to summer, and I'm team fall all the way. Now, what about you? I mean, now you escape to warmer climates. I know that you're a man of the country. You see polluted parts of the country, but I'm talking about Minnesota, I think fall is the best season.
It is awesome. You know what? I'm on the fence because I love them both. I mean, I love the summertime. I love the heat. I truly do. I love boating and all those kind of things. But you know, when it gets towards fall, and this is certainly fall feeling weather we've had recently, as we had those temperatures drop incredibly fast, just amazing. But you know, fall's football, and you know, I'm a football guy, yep. So it's. I did a lot of work with ESPN for a long time doing college football. I really enjoyed that, and. And now that I'm not doing that, I can't wait for those Saturday mornings and going over there to the stadium at the Gophers and tailgating and hanging out with all my friends. And I mean, it's just, that's fall for me. It's phenomenal. I love it.
That sounds like a non-answer, Adam. It sounds like he's...
He's trying to be Mr. Fence. Everybody. Pick a side. Pick a side, Pete. Come on.
If I had to pick, I think I would take fall.
You're right, Pete.
And because also, Pete, let me remind everybody who Pete is very active in the Lyme disease community and getting people checked out and finding a cure. And in the summer, there are more deer ticks out there, so maybe the fall's a little bit safer.
It's a little bit better. You're right. It is. And so thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, Twin Cities Lyme does a great job of trying to get people help, and hopefully along the way, people can confirm what they've got and understand it, and mm-hmm. then have a better chance of getting through it in a much better way, because it can be very debilitating. So thank you for mentioning that.
No problem. So the Inflation Reduction Act is supposed to get signed by the president today. I know you've looked at this. We've talked about this a lot. Obviously, it's not in place yet, but it ensures billions of dollars for things like climate change, for clean energy, for inflation. How do you think that this will affect the everyday person? Do you think it is enough to bring inflation down that we will eventually see it in our pockets?
Well, that is such a great question, because the answer would be yes, but that is way out into the future still. And the reason I say that is, you know, it's wonderful that we're doing this, and obviously we should be attacking things, I think, from a green energy perspective with all the great technology that we've got. But will it affect things right now? Absolutely not. I think mm-hmm. it's, you know, we are so dependent still on different types of energy. And that's really what has put us into the position that we are in right now, is that dependence that we've got. And, you know, and in some ways, you know, we've done things to ourselves as a country by stopping certain plans that were in place and, you know, holding back certain things. But I think there's a happy medium in there somewhere. I think we all want the climate to be obviously as pristine as possible. But I think there is a transitional position that we have to be in to be able to get there. Because let's be honest, the clean energy that's out there right now is fantastic, but it's not financially feasible at this point. Mm-hmm. It will get there. It absolutely will get there. And then I think that's why we're targeting. They look to 2030 and dates out into the future, and I think that's the way we have to view it. So in the near term, we won't see a whole heck of a lot, I don't think. But in the extended, you know, going out almost a decade, I think it's going to be phenomenal. It's going to be great for the environment, and people will be very excited about it with the tax credits and everything that goes along with what we're talking about here, and the health care side of the bill as well, with lowering the prescription drug costs and that type of thing. I mean, it's a big undertaking. There's no doubt, and you can tell that by the $740 billion that's being thrown in that direction. But it is something that I think is very important, and I think everybody sees the importance of it. It's just a matter of the direction and understanding that we still probably have to still work with oil. We have to still work with, you know, a lot of the different products that are there. And I think that's where we find a bit of a divide.
Yeah, you can't just shut off that switch and hop to something else. So much of the factors, Pete, that drive up prices, you know, the supply chain issues. Mm-hmm. Where are we on that? How, you know, are we getting caught up? Are things smoothing out? And if not, how long is that process going to take before we can actually say, you know what, the supply chain's kind of back to pre-pandemic flows?
We're getting closer, Adam, to that all the time, of course. But are we all the way there? No, absolutely not. But we have made huge strides. And I can tell you firsthand, I've been a part of this supply chain. I mean, I feel like a guy who's literally right there in front at the front seat, because my wife and I are building a home. And you have just about every aspect of everything that you need when you're building a home. You understand, you can see the prices. And we've seen them actually coming down significantly when you're looking at things in the AV space, like, you know, televisions and those types of things. But, you know, I would say that it has mostly at least loosened up significantly. Is it all the way back? Absolutely not. But we're there. We're getting there. And we're getting really, really close. As a matter of fact, the semiconductor world, those chips, and a lot of people, we've been talking about that more and more. And we had Ms. Pelosi was over there, obviously, in the Asian markets, talking about that type of thing, because there is so much that's being done other places other than the United States. And that's the other push that we are on right now, is trying to build so we are not as dependent on foreign countries for those chips that are so important for the semiconductor world.
Pete, in your business, do you have employees or do you just work for yourself?
No, we've got quite a few. I think our company right now is about a little under 100, most of which is in Chicago. I'm the only Minnesotan. But the majority of our company is based in Chicago, and we've got all kinds of we've got tech guys as well as all kinds of different people in different modes. Some are in sales and so forth. Some are trading, and it's a pretty diverse group of people that we've got. Mostly younger, it seems like, but I'd probably bring that age up a little bit, because I'm older than most guys by a pretty good stretch.
Well, Pete, do they work remotely? And if you have 100 employees, do you monitor them? Excuse me. Do you employ software that monitors how long they're working, how much they're on their computer? Because the New York Times has a big story about this today. Big companies are monitoring employees, and some are getting in trouble if they're not at their desk or at their computer as much as their neighbor in accounting is. So how do you work that out in your business? And then also, how do you feel about, you know, remote work and monitoring employees?
I understand the whole remote idea. I think it was obviously very important throughout the majority of the pandemic. But I think I do think that there is something to the folks that are in the office, and there is a different work sort of a theme and ethic, and everything I think is just a little bit, you know, it's a lot easier to be focused, I think, when you are around other folks that are focused on what they're doing. That being said, I love the ability for some of our people. Some of them are still working from home, and yes, we monitor them. But we give them, they've got goals, and they've got to hit those goals or they're gone. So if they choose that they're not going to do the things that they need to get done each and every day, then they probably won't last too long with us. But overall, I would tell you that they've done a great job. I know Jamie Dimon, who you guys probably know that name, but J.P. Morgan, he's the guy who runs the whole show there, and he's a good friend, and he is not happy. He does not like remote work at all, and I'm somewhere a little bit more in the middle. I think that it's if there are people out there who are disciplined, and if they can be disciplined, if they can execute the way we need them to execute, I'm all for it. I don't need to see their face right in front of me every day. I can see it through the screen, But there are people out there that have taken advantage of it. So I fully understand where Jamie's coming from. And it's, you know, there is something about being in studio or being, you know, in the office where people could see you. And there's that camaraderie that you build as, you know, partners within a business. And oftentimes those ideas actually can blossom a lot faster, I think, in person than they do through the, you know, Zoom and everything else.
Yeah, I think the pandemic has shown us that we can do it. Now, should we do it? That's the thing. I think absolutely there should be accommodations made for people who just need to work from home, certain. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm with you. I think there should be a pushback to get people back in the office, and just not only for the creativity, the workforce in that office, the productivity, but just also some of these places where workers have abandoned. You know, we need workers back, especially I look at downtown Minneapolis. We want workers to come back down here. That would improve things. You know, and once we get into the regular season, Pete, we're short on time here, but we'll talk Vikings much more. But they did play a preseason game yesterday. I don't know how closely you watched that, but if you did, anything stand out to you?
Yeah, Kellen Mond, I was very impressed because I have not been impressed with him at all until now. And he really, I thought he looked confident. He had made great decisions. He didn't force the ball. He didn't throw interceptions. He really looked like the kid that that he was at Texas A&M when he was just, you know, an outstanding quarterback. So that stood out more than anything. I just wanted to see some progression from our quarterbacks. You know, with Kirk out, gives them both a lot more time to get out there. And I thought that Kellen Mond looked great yesterday.
Yeah, it started out, you know, the reaction on Twitter right away, because he started out struggling, as did Sean Mannion, and everybody's like, uh-oh, we need a backup quarterback. But yeah, you're right. He was pretty impressive in the second half.
Yeah, and at some point, maybe we'll still look for a backup. I don't think that's a bad idea. The Cam Newtons of the world that are out there is a possibility. But yesterday, he played well. He's going to have to show it more than one game and more than, you know, 15 players or 30 players or whatever it was. But yeah, it was nice to see that. It was really refreshing, and I'm excited. I'll be out there this week with the 49ers coming to town for a few of those practices as well. So hopefully you guys can get out there, and maybe we'll see each other in person for once.
No kidding. That'd be nice.
Forget this remote stuff. Pete Najarian, always great to talk with you. Follow Pete on Twitter, at Pete Najarian. Always a fun Monday hearing your voice, sir. Have a great day.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
You got it. And Pete joined us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker hotline. And we promised you the identification of the place with the low gas prices. David is going to drop that next.
1024 News Talk 830 WCCO. It is time once again. We love it. We like to be on our toes, especially on a Monday. We need to wake up. So Jordana and I give our takes on some quick takes, quick topics.
It's hard to keep up, you know.
Definitely hard to keep up. We'll start here with Adam.
All right,
Adam,
ready.
Gas prices are dropping, as you've maybe seen at the pump. The Costco in St. Louis Park, just a few miles from here, is now at $3.76. There's a station, a couple in Hastings, at $3.31. And get this, there's one station, the Costco in Des Moines, Iowa. I mean, it's a little far to drive for gas, but there's a station in Des Moines that's under $3 a gallon, $2.95 at the Costco.
Let's go, Brandon.
So when I drive to when I drive to Wichita later this month, I'm definitely stopping at that Costco in Des Moines.
They're at the Costcos though, so you need a membership.
Yes, right. You do. But I have that, so that's what we're
Yeah, that's
do.
Great.
Yeah, I have a Costco card.
But Adam, will dropping gas prices this fall change any of your plans? Will you go on an extra trip, drive more because of the prices coming down a dollar?
At this point, I'm saying no, because we didn't have any really major trips planned. But that stress of that would free me up to consider more options. Yes.
Yeah. Going over to Jordana, as we talked about a little bit last week, Liz Cheney is facing a Trump-backed challenger in tomorrow's Wyoming primary, and it looks like she's likely to lose that race.
Mm-hmm.
What would Cheney's departure from the U.S. legislature say about the state of democracy in the United States?
Well, I think it would have... I think it would lead the Republican Party to lose what's left of the moral compass. I think Liz Cheney has been the only truth teller, and maybe not the only. Maybe there are some others. She's certainly been the most vocal at this, through the January 6th elections, and by speaking out against President Trump. Her father, Dick Cheney, even did a commercial against Trump. But I do think that anybody who was, or at least in the Republican Party, that looked to her as, okay, at least we have Liz, at least we have somebody talking sense, at least we can, you know, Liz is still upholding the values of the Republican Party, I think that would completely wipe it out. And it would be a very slippery slope for then the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world and some any other Looney Tunes to completely take over the party and co-opt the values of the Republican Party.
Yeah, it's a dangerous slope we go down that the groupthink, pushes out even not necessarily even more moderate view. I mean, 5 years ago, certainly 10 years ago, Liz Cheney would have been on the far right of the far right.
Correct.
And the fact that this party has moved that further right, where just because, you know, she had some principles and said, you know, I'm going to vote for impeachment, and I think this former president did some horrible things, just totally thrown aside, and it's sad.
Yeah. I hope she wins.
The Twins have led the Central Division for most of the season, but now after dropping two out of three over the weekend to the Angels, they find themselves 2.5 games back of the Guardians. Adam, will the Twins make the postseason this year?
I will say yes. Boy, it sure seems, don't forget, we're still in mid-August. Lots of baseball left. Twins start a homestand tonight against the Royals. The Royals are terrible. Twins have a lot of games against some terrible teams. Now, does that mean they'll do anything in the postseason? Probably not, but I do believe they will win the division and play in the postseason.
Unions are in the news on a couple of different levels this week. Employees at Trader Joe's are in the process of unionizing, and nurses in Minnesota will vote actually later this morning about whether to strike. Jordana, are unions and the possible increase of union control in Minnesota a good thing for Minnesotans?
I think it is. The experience that I've had in our union, I've been in a union most of my career just because that's how we do it in broadcasting. I've had a very good experience with SAG-AFTRA. That's our union. They've helped me a lot, even during my illness, and they do protect us at work. We have a contract, you know, renewal that's every year, every 3 years, where things come up. I do believe it protects the employees. And personally, you know, I've asked them to look at my personal contracts. I've asked them to help me with my illness with some outside resources that the company didn't help. And I do. I think employees feel like they are empowered when they have a union. They have somebody to talk to. I feel like they feel that they're not on their own and they're not sort of left hanging and at the whim of the employer, that they have some rights that they can fall back on. So I am a fan of unions. I'm a fan. I like them. I think we should have them more in Minnesota and Trader Joe's. Good job. And they treated their employees great, Trader Joe's. Everybody loved working there. But that's okay. If there's a union in place, hopefully they'll have a great relationship and they will continue to treat them well.
Well, it shows you right now, because of the job market, that workers have a lot of power right now. A lot of leverage and a lot of power. And that's ripe for unions coming in and representing more workers. 10:30 News Talk 8. Speaking of workers and workers' rights, you mentioned it with Pete. I was shocked when I read this article about how close. Like, I assume that companies are monitoring their employees, even the ones who are working remotely. I didn't know that involved actual computers and actual software that they're doing it. So each log on you make counts towards your work time. That is shocking to me. That conversation next about workers, how they're monitoring what you do even when you're not in the office. That's next after traffic and weather. Ooh, ominous words there from Mike Ehrmantraut.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Bittersweet day for me. I am looking with much anticipation forward to tonight's series finale of Better Call Saul. But also I'll be sad because that series will be over after tonight. It's one of the best TV series I've ever watched. If you've never seen it, Better Call Saul is unusual. It's kind of both a prequel and a sequel to the immensely popular Breaking Bad television series. It focuses on Bob Odenkirk, who is Saul Goodman, Jimmy McGill, a con man, a lawyer, a con man who you think would have no redeeming qualities, but somehow you find yourself rooting for the guy. But tonight will be it. Tonight is the final episode, and I am looking forward to it with much anticipation. But again, it's one of those moments where, you know, TV characters, they become part of our lives.
Yes.
They become, especially when you have an appointment television show. Mm-hmm. And the thing I like about Better Call Saul, which is on AMC, different than how we usually consume television nowadays, things are streamed, right? We have episode after episode available to us. We can watch them all in succession at one time in one mm-hmm. sitting if we want. Whereas Better Call Saul is still a once a week. You know, you can watch it, obviously, after the episode is done, but you have to wait that whole week to see the next episode.
Yes, you do.
And you
mm-hmm.
That way you consume the previous episode. You think about it. You come up with ideas as to what's happening, or you can anticipate what will happen. And I think that adds to the TV viewing experience, as opposed to just kind of plowing through a bunch of episodes at one time. That certainly has its time and place. We do that with some other shows, but that's what's so good about a television series like Better Call Saul. And it's coming to an end tonight. So tomorrow I'll be scratching my head wondering, okay, did it satisfy me? Did this finale tie up enough loose ends where I can say that was a great series finale? Or will it be disappointing, like, oh, I wish this would have happened. I wish this would have happened to this character, which leads us to this question. And we're not the first show to tackle this topic, but mm-hmm. it's a good reflection over our listeners and what we think, and that is, what was the best TV series finale of all time? I mean, I'm sure you can think of some great ones, you can think of disappointing ones, but there's such a wide variety. For me, it wasn't the greatest show, but the series finale of a series called 6 Feet Under, which was on mm-hmm. HBO in the mm-hmm. 2000s. It was about a family that owned a funeral home. Mm-hmm. And the premise of the show, they would start out with somebody who died. It wasn't necessarily a central character, but that would be the mm-hmm. kind of the launch of the show. Well, the end of 6 Feet Under, the final series, the final shot was them going through each character and showing how that character died in the future. And
that is satisfying.
I mean, you talk about satisfying, mm-hmm. and it was just very well done over the music. Mm-hmm. And that is one that sticks out to me, even though it wasn't the greatest television show. I didn't, you know, it wouldn't certainly make my top 10 by any means. But that finale to me stands out as just very satisfying, very well done. And I think you look more favorably on that series because it had such a great series finale.
So do you need a satisfying ending, or would you, you know, like The Sopranos, for example, I'm thinking of that finale.
Yep.
Where it just goes to black. I'm not doing any spoilers here. I hope you've seen The Sopranos.
You should have by now.
But
we
don't know really who, what, where, when, how, why. It left us guessing, and there's going to be no more Sopranos that we know of, as in Tony's dead in real life. I mean, I guess they could do another one with the kid, but we don't know what happened. So is that better or worse? Would you rather find out all the gook, or do you want it to kind of keep your mind guessing?
And that's the thing, too. It's like, okay, this, even though I want it this way, this isn't my art. This is the television shows, the creator. They get to do it. That's a perfect example of one where I think history has treated that one much more kindly, because at the time, if you remember, I think it was 2006, I remember watching that and watching the diner scene with Tony in the diner, and I know it's coming to the end of the episode because you're looking at the time and like, oh my God, what is going to happen here? I remember being physically nervous watching that, and the screen just went blank, and I'm like, what happened? Did my cable go out?
I was mad.
Yeah.
I was mad.
And
at
the time, I thought, wow, that was kind of a bummer, but you know... Now that I look back on it, I'm convinced that was Tony getting hit. He got mm-hmm. whacked. And that the screen, the immediate black was, we're done. This story is over with. So I think
Death is final.
Death is final. And that, so I've come to love that final episode. 651-461-9226. Your calls, your texts. What is the greatest series finale or one that is disappointing. I think many people, Jordana, were you a fan of Seinfeld?
Yes, of course.
That
yes.
one is roundly regarded to as an extremely disappointing series finale.
Extremely disappointing. But then, what did we expect? It was a show about nothing.
Right.
So we were sort of like, okay, well, that was a mediocre nothing ending.
Right.
So if the rest of us were looking for satisfaction, we didn't get it. In fact, I just started, by the way, you know, when I was sick, started watching Seinfeld from season one, episode one.
Yes.
And it's been
still
fun
holds
to go
up.
Back.
Still holds up
yeah,
very well, right?
It definitely still holds up. But I know what happens at the end. But again, I wanted to experience, just because it's one of the greatest shows of all time, if not the greatest. So I wanted to just experience the whole thing again. But I don't know that I have a finale that I can say is the greatest of all time. I mean the Sopranos one affected mm-hmm. me, obviously.
Yep.
And at the time, I was really mad. I was like, no, you got to tell us what happened.
Yeah.
You know, you needed some time to sink in for that. I don't even remember the Friends finale. Oh, that was satisfying, right? When Monica and Chandler went off to live their life in the country and have a baby and all that stuff.
Yeah, I don't really remember that one either. I wasn't a huge fan of Friends, but that one comes to my, again, the Breaking Bad, which is, you know, the reason we're talking about Better Call Saul. That had a fantastic season finale. And the music.
So if I want to watch Better Call Saul, do I have to watch Breaking Bad first?
I don't think you do. I think you can watch Better Call Saul. Obviously, if you've seen Breaking Bad, you'll have a lot more. Oh, there's that. You'll remember a lot more and you understand where they're coming from. But I don't think you have to. I think you can go in and watch it and those characters. And then it would be fairly interesting to see Breaking Bad then after. Yeah, so I think you can do that. 651-461-9226. Saint Elsewhere was the worst ending. Also, I loved Saint Elsewhere. I was a kid when Saint Elsewhere was the hospital, and the series finale was the son of one of the doctors was autistic, and at the very end of the series, they show the hospital with snow, and it kind of fades away, and it's all in this snow globe. So basically, that this whole series was in the imagination of this autistic child. Very strange ending. Bob Newhart, it was all a dream.
Yep.
Oh yeah, that was the second Newhart show. He woke up with his wife from the previous Newhart show.
Jeez.
And that second series had all been a dream. Lots of people commenting on the MASH finale. I think that was still one of the highest rated television shows, viewed television shows ever. So that's
I was
there.
A little young for that one.
Me too. 651-461-9226. Your Lindis Construction time check is 10:51. Time to call their energy experts for a complimentary insulation inspection. I'm going to watch this series finale tonight, and both of you guys don't know what I'm talking about. What am I going to do?
No. I'll read a little bit about it so we can talk about it tomorrow. And really, you just have to say if it's satisfying or not. People haven't, you know, we don't want to be a spoiler for anybody.
I don't want to be a spoiler.
Maybe now I'll binge it.
Binge it. I would do, you know, and a texter pushes back saying you should watch Breaking Bad first. I think either is fine, but I get, you know what? Just for the sake of, I guess, how it looks, you know, if you're watching Better Call Saul, then you go back to Breaking Bad, which is a decade earlier, it might look a little different. So maybe that is the way to do it.
Yeah,
I think either way is fine. But maybe watching Breaking Bad first. But you said you tried it.
It was just like a little too violent for me. They were dissolving bodies in acid. And I was like, know what? I think that maybe this isn't for me. So
Better Call Saul is pretty violent too. There's some very funny moments, but there's a lot of violence when you're dealing with drug cartels.
Let's take some calls. Andy's in Malacca. Hi, Andy. What's the best finale you've seen?
Well, I'm thinking there's three for sure, and one that's going to be coming up sometime. But Big Bang Theory, Friends, Mom, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how Yellowstone ends. That one's going to be really good. Actually, now it's more like Ogilvy and Mora, and heading for some muskies over in Wisconsin.
Nice. Yellowstone, remind me, is there
one season
more season left?
believe so. One's coming up in November. Don't know what's going to happen after that, but that one is pretty gripping. And, Jordan, it's good to hear you back.
Oh, well, thank you, Andy.
Thanks, Andy. Good luck. Hopefully tie into some big muskies over there in Wisconsin.
That's right. Good luck. Alan's in St. Paul. Alan, favorite finale?
Yeah. Hi, guys.
Hi, Alan.
Dallas was my big thing. That was huge back in the day, the Dallas final. You know, I'm going back, you know, quite a few years, but that final on Dallas, you know, you got who shot JR, you got all this stuff going on. That was great. A lot of fun. And as far as the Better Call Saul deal, I'm not a big fan of it. My girlfriend actually is, so I pick up just little bits and pieces. But it was fun the other day to see Carol Burnett on an episode.
Yep, Carol Burnett has appeared in the last two episodes, and I think she'll probably be in the series finale too. But yes, very out of character for Carol Burnett. Wonderful, just a wonderful addition to the cast.
Love that. And can we sneak in Mark and White Bear? Hi, Mark.
Hey there.
Best finale?
MASH, without a doubt.
Remind us what happened, because I was too young for that one.
Okay, I'm aging myself, yeah.
That's okay.
No, it was, they just kind of wrapped up the whole end of the Korean conflict, and when everybody from the MASH unit was going their separate ways, and they just did it very well, kind of just making a good conclusion to the whole thing.
Good. Thanks, hon. I appreciate the call.
Somebody texting.
Take care, Mark.
Somebody texting me. Don't talk about it tomorrow. I'm a couple of episodes behind, and Jor should watch Breaking Bad first. Yeah, that's another thing.
Okay.
In this day and age, really, because people watch on demand now, you can't spill the beans even 24 hours later. Even though I don't know. I still do Ask Adam Anything with Chad, and Chad is definitely going to want to talk about the Better Call Saul finale tomorrow. I guess we don't have to get into the details of what exactly happened.
No,
we can just talk about whether or not it was satisfying. But I cannot wait for that tonight. Gilligan's Island, when they eat him, that didn't happen.
I don't think they eat him.
That would have been a much better show.
So I'm going to start.
Buddy, I'm getting hungry, little buddy. We're going to have to cut you up. And
and somebody reminded me of the Dallas, little buddy. The Dallas ending. It was in 1991. And remember these names? J.R. lost his company to Cliff Barnes.
Oh, Cliff Barnes.
Sue Ellen, his wife and kids left him.
Sue Ellen, right?
And then,
how dare you.
And then Bobby owned South Fork.
Yep.
Yeah, and J.R. was just alone.
Poor J.R.
Which he deserved.
Poor J.R. I'm going to say this. Gilligan's Island would have been a much better episode, a much darker episode, had they had to eat one of the castaways. I mean, the professor can make a radio out of two coconuts, yet where did they find the food? I mean, they were there for the long time, and then people would show up and leave, and it's like, come on. Did they really want to get off the island?
And then who did they eat?
Well,
they
wouldn't eat Gilligan. I mean, Gilligan was pretty skinny. I mean, you want a little meat on the bones.
Right.
I think they'd have been looking at Skipper. Skipper,
yeah.
Alan Hale,
Skipper,
you're biting the dust.
Meat.
Yeah.
Yes.
Skipper had a lot of meat.
God, I love that
there
show.
There we go.
I love that show.
Speaking of lovely shows, yesterday, U.S. Bank Stadium. If you were a rocker from the 80s and 90s, you had to have been at U.S. Bank Stadium. You had Def Leppard. You had Poison. You had Motley Crue. You had Joan Jett all day long. Rock and roll. Ross Ralia was there from the Pioneer Press. Very funny follow on Twitter. If I was laughing out loud at his tweets from the show last night. We'll get a first-hand account from Ross coming up next because he was there, and it started, I think, at like 3:30 in the afternoon and all the way into the night. So we'll get
that's
Ross.
That's a long day of music.
That's a long day of music. Even if you love the music, that's a long day of music.
That's a long day. And you were saying you can't really leave and come back.
No.
You have to kind of be there the whole time.
Right.
And us aging rockers, I don't know. I mean, I need to go pee.
Ross suffered through it, so we didn't have to. Ross Ralia from the Pioneer Press reviews the Mega Rock Concert next on WCCO.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.